This is The Beat, a podcast series that keeps you in the know about the latest community policing topics facing our nation.
Hello and welcome. My name is Kimberly Brummett, and on behalf of the COPS office, I would like to introduce Dr. Randall Lockwood, Senior Vice President for Forensic Sciences and Anti-Cruelty Projects for the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, or ASPCA. Dr. Lockwood is here today with me to discuss the link between animal cruelty and domestic violence. Welcome, Dr. Lockwood.
Thank you.
Please tell us a little bit about the links between domestic violence and animal cruelty.
Well, we first started really learning of these connections, I think, with interviews of women seeking protection in domestic violence shelters almost 15, close to 20 years ago. And what we consistently have been hearing is that about three-fourths of the women seeking protection have pets at home, which is not unusual for families with school-age children, usually two-thirds to three-fourths of those families. But the disturbing statistic was that 71% of those women who had pets at home and were seeking protection in a domestic violence shelter were reporting that their batterer had threatened, injured, or killed their pet. And in about half of the cases, the pet had been injured or killed. Really pointed out that this was a very widespread phenomenon, given the prevalence of pets among this population and the high frequency of animal cruelty within the context of domestic violence. What that translated into is that just about every other woman seeking protection in a domestic violence shelter had a pet that had also been a victim of animal cruelty.
So as a response to this linkage between violence against people and violence against animals, the National Link Coalition was created, and in partnership with ASPCA has put out a toolkit for the use at the community level. Tell us a little bit about the National Link Coalition's partnership and the toolkit that's been developed.
The National Link Coalition really started about 8 years ago as an informal group that was brought together first at a meeting in Portland, Maine, and representing initially about 20 or 25 groups. It has kind of been distilled down to about a dozen groups. It's not an incorporated nonprofit. It's a loose organization, but has representatives from ASPCA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, and several domestic violence groups and child protection groups and others. So it's a collection of professionals who are interested in sharing resources and information about the interconnection between animal cruelty and other forms of family violence, and particularly highlighting community responses. What we're seeing around the country and now around the world is the formation of local link groups or task forces that do try to bring together people from all these different disciplines. What we had found was that in the past, responding to community violence really was something that was really siloed, that you had groups really concentrating on specific victims. So you had child protection groups who were focusing on the children. You had domestic violence responders that were focusing on those victims. You had regular law enforcement looking at criminal activity. And you had animal care and control or humane societies dealing with those. And these groups were not talking to one another, and what we began to realize is that often we were all dealing with the same perpetrators, and that community response and community response to violence in general was something that was best shared and best coordinated across these various groups.
What would you suggest to local police departments wanting to learn more about this linkage between animal violence and domestic violence and how they can implement the toolkit in their own communities?
But what we're seeing now is, first of all, you know, all police departments do have training on domestic violence as part of the core standards of police training. Increasingly, we are providing training that also talks about the importance of recognizing the role of animals in this, partly just being alerted to that connection. You ask questions of not just domestic violence victims, but child abuse victims. Ask questions or open your eyes to see what's perhaps happening with the animals in that kind of situation. What we see quite often is that there has been a pet that's been injured or killed in the context of domestic violence, and yet no questions have been asked, and in some cases, you know, that particular crime hasn't been reported. And that actually might prove to be the significant thing to respond to in terms of moving forward with the case. We might have a domestic violence victim, human victim, who later recants or does not want to press charges, but we still have an injured or killed animal. And moving forward in the prosecution of the animal cruelty case might actually result in the same kind of outcome, with the perpetrator facing some consequences for his or her actions, perhaps being placed in a better treatment program just as they would have been had they been convicted of the domestic abuse. So paying attention to that gives you an extra tool, an extra piece of information that might lead to an important outcome.
The creation of the Link Coalition really supports this philosophy of community policing, building relationships to create safer communities. Can you share some other examples of where law enforcement, animal welfare, and social services have successfully partnered and increased the community's capacity to respond to and prevent domestic violence and animal abuse?
I think one of the best recent examples, as we've seen, was the somewhat controversial handing over of animal cruelty investigation and to the New York Police Department after ASPCA had had that responsibility since 1866. So we didn't do it blindly, actually, though. We spent quite a long time and continue to be involved in training all police officers in New York on the significance of animal cruelty in general and its connection to other crimes. And what we've seen in building that relationship is much better response. We've seen more felony animal cruelty cases brought forward just in the first 5 months of this year than we did all of last year, because we've gone from having about 20 humane law enforcement agents with the ASPCA that were doing this job in the past to 34,000 police officers in the New York Police Department who are now looking out for some of the same issues in their daily duties. And I think that's a trend we're going to see in the future as more and more communities recognize that recognizing and responding to animal cruelty should be a core part of police activity. It's not that animals are more important than people, but animals are an important indicator of what else is going on in a community, and animal crimes are something that the general public cares very much about. So taking animal crime seriously is just part of good community policing.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lockwood, for providing us with your time and expertise today on this issue.
The Beat was brought to you by the United States Department of Justice Cops Office. The COPS Office helps to keep our nation's communities safe by giving grants to law enforcement agencies, developing community policing publications, developing partnerships, and solving problems.
The opinions contained herein are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. References to specific agencies, companies, products, or services should not be considered an endorsement by the authors or the U.S. Department of Justice. Rather, the references are illustrations to supplement discussion of the issues.